Welcome. It is Sarat and Marciano. Did you ever have that feeling like you forgot something and you can't really figure out what it is? You just feel like there's something you forgot before you left the house?
It's something usually huge.
Yeah.
Like and your shoes or...
What?
Just kidding. Something huge, though. Like I have forgotten my purse. That's huge.
I had this feeling driving in today. I feel like I forgot something. And then by the time I got here to the station, I realized what it was. We drove separately today. So it was you I forgot. But
oh,
I didn't forget you. We just came in two cars today.
Yes, we did. But haven't we forgotten a child at some point somewhere? I think we left a child somewhere.
Yeah, well, what was that? One time we did that.
It was a quiet child.
Oh, I know what it was. No, it was during the holidays when your family was staying with us.
Oh, yeah.
And we were all going somewhere.
Nephew.
And we thought he was in one of the cars.
No, we didn't really think about him at all because he basically did a huge disappearing act even though he was at the house the entire time. He slept all day. He was up all night.
Right.
And so we would never see him. And one day we went out sledding and... We realized when we got to the place, hey, where's Andrew?
He was in the house.
Sleeping.
And the alarm was on, too, so.
Yeah, that was not good. He couldn't leave the house.
On Friday night, there was a talent show, a little battle of the bands at our daughter's school. And they had an MC from... the radio station a lot of the kids listen to, KISS FM.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching him, and I was thinking, this is me 35 years ago, because he's there, he's giving away things, and he's keeping the show moving between acts, and he's promoting his show a little bit and talking to the kids.
And he was great.
I was really impressed. He looked good, and he was really into it. And then I saw him posing for pictures.
And the kids were really into him.
He didn't just smile in the pictures. He always had a pose, like he'd do something. Is that what you're supposed to do today? You're supposed to, like, do something with your arms or hands? He was making, like, signals. One time he went like this. I don't know what that means, you know, with his fingers.
Pointing at people?
Pointing and then making faces. And I thought, I got to start doing that. When we're always taking pictures here for our Facebook page with our guests, and I just stand there and smile. I'm going to start doing, striking a pose. So
you've done that a few times, though. I've posted pictures where you're pointing at the guest, and
I'm
always
do
think,
that more.
Wait, why is he pointing
well, apparently,
at the guest?
Apparently the kids do that today. And then I was very enamored of the way he had a lot of energy. And I thought, you know, when I did that, I didn't have that much energy. So people must have fallen asleep when I was emceeing shows back in the day.
Were you throwing out, like, one-liners, trying to be funny?
I may have, but I was underselling it. I was very sort of too low-key, I think. Just a notch above sleep.
How does that compare to now? Like right now, what you're doing now.
Well, if you think I'm laid back now, you should have attended one of my personal appearances in the 70s. So anyway, I go up to the kid, and I call him a kid because at this point, everybody's a kid to me. And I say, I introduce myself, and I said, I was very impressed with the job you did. It's a great pleasure to meet you. And he gave me a look, and he kind of looked terrified. Like he was going to call security.
Because he thought you were just like this.
I don't know. I introduced myself, but he seemed stunned. And then
Did he know who you were?
I think so.
Did he know you from radio?
Yeah, because he said something very nice to me in the quick second we had this exchange. And then he just left, and I was looking for him because I wanted to talk to him more. And I thought, well, I guess he's done with me. But then I got a very nice tweet from him.
You got the tweet, or he tweeted and you saw it?
Well, it was one of those messages to me on my Twitter account. So what does that mean? I'm sure the kid knows. But Eric Z, that's who it was. Eric Z. I think he's on Saturday evening.
And very cute.
So he sent me a very, very lovely message on Twitter. Am I using the right lingo now?
if you mean Twitter, then you are.
Yeah,
using
I looked
the right
at I looked on Twitter and I saw
he
like
tweeted
a
about
tweet.
You.
Yeah.
Did he tweet at Bob Surratt?
Yeah.
Is that what he did?
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but he was kind of like he's kind of like Ryan Seacrest. He had that look.
Oh, that's
and
a nice
that
compliment.
Spirit and that energy about him.
It was very cool because one of the things he was doing was getting the kids to tweet him,
mm-hmm.
to tweet about what
yeah.
was going on.
Yeah,
and the first like 12 people or something like that won a prize.
Mm-hmm.
The prize was a plastic cup. From Kiss yeah, FM. I know one of the kids that won, and I was like, I walked by him and said, "Congratulations, Tommy."
Well, that was another thing different. In my day, we'd give away cars and houses,
right.
But the economy's changed for radio. Anyway, so, thank you, Eric Z.
That was really fun, and he really made it happen.
Yeah, I was quite enamored
that
of his
performance. That was part of Youth Connections, by the way.
I'm still excited seeing disc jockeys in person.
I was more excited about seeing the Battle of the Bands.
Yeah, it was great.
And the kids were amazing.
A lot
and,
of...
Pink Lightning, which is the name of the band our daughter is in, was really great, too.
They were all impressive, and I also was impressed with the audience, because, again, well, now... back in my day in high school, when I was in high school, we'd be in the audience for a show like that, and we'd be booing people and heckling, and there was none of that.
But why would you be heckling and booing your friends who are on stage
Just the way we behaved in Roosevelt High School back then. A lot of show business news today, and some of it very sad about Philip Seymour Hoffman. Also, what's with Woody Allen? Who better to ask about those stories than Mr. TMZ himself, Harvey Levin? I'm very excited we're going to be talking to Harvey at about 2:05 today.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting.
Can you hear my chair? Every time I breathe.
We'll get some 10W30 on that before we get out of here at 3 o'clock today. And, I don't know what to make of the reports now that say, don't worry about cholesterol, don't worry about saturated fat, worry about foods that cause inflammation. Well, what are those foods, and is that true? Is that what we need to worry about now? And we'll get the expert opinion of somebody from North Shore University Heart Health at 1:15 today. Okay, mark your notepad there. 1:15, definitely health news you can use. And what else? Oh, the Love Lab later, some best and worst pickup lines. And we'll find out about the Super Bowl ratings and other matters pertaining to the dull game coming right up.
I want to know, are you going to be walking around that cruise ship at 3 o'clock in the morning and saying, I can't believe I'm in the middle of the Mediterranean?
That's what I like
to
do.
Breezes
and on
coming
this,
every which way.
On this ship, you don't have a lot of people, and the ship is it's roomy enough so that you can find your own isolated areas. And so I enjoyed taking naps in different places.
I just remember, I wish I had videotaped you doing that, because that was like a moment I think I'll never forget, is you walking around just saying, this is unbelievable. And of course, you were ruined for life. You cannot go on another cruise that isn't one of these Regent ones.
You missed an opportunity, Marianne, to broadcast the Super Bowl yesterday, because I was reading about... Roberto Garza, the Bears, well, he's a free agent now, and he made his television debut yesterday. He was a sideline reporter for, how do you say this, Fox Deportes, D-E-P-O-R-T-E-S?
Deportes.
I can't say it like
Deportes
that.
Deportes means sports.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. for the first time, Fox did an original Spanish language Super Bowl broadcast, and Roberto Garza was part of the broadcast team. We should have got you in there. I mean, we have all those tapes of you with Glenn Kozlowski, the Bears talk for women only that we did this past season.
Yeah, I could have translated what he said.
That could have got you a gig.
Yeah. Well, next year, I'm gonna try out for that, and I want my co-host to be Ozzy Guillen.
Yeah, he's tweeting all the time in Spanish, isn't he? Oh, you want to hear
Spanish
what
Spanish and English, and he's doing some broadcasting work in Venezuela, I believe.
Want to hear what I tweeted during the game yesterday?
Yes.
First,
sure.
Right at the beginning of the game, you know that crazy play when the snap got away? Right then and there, I tweeted, "Hey, I had that prop bet. I just won $10 million. Get it? That ball is sailing by Manning. Then, after a while, I tweeted, I think by the second quarter, I tweeted, "Hey, what else is on?" Because the game was pretty boring. And then in the third quarter, I tweeted.
Did anybody like retweet you?
Yeah.
Or,
uh-huh.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you the one that got retweeted the most. Not this one, but the next one. Third quarter, I tweeted, "Time for Denver to put in Cade McNown." I thought that was pretty good. But this is the one that people jumped on. You know the Heinz commercial that ran?
Mm-hmm.
I tweeted this, "Heinz ketchup on a hot dog, they just lost the Chicago market." Because in one of the little quick scenes,
right.
One of the quick cuts in the commercial, they were putting ketchup on a hot dog. Apparently, they didn't have any advisors in Chicago on that commercial.
You know what? I think that people eat hot dogs with ketchup probably anywhere but Chicago. But I grew up eating, I ate one hot dog with ketchup on it.
Blasphemy!
My mother used to put a slice of American cheese on the hot dog and then stick it in the oven, and then when it came out, put ketchup on it.
Ugh.
Of course, I had one bite of a hot dog once.
Ugh.
That was not a good combo.
No. The groundhog over the weekend saw his shadow, so you know what that means, 6 more weeks of Justin Bieber stories. That doesn't make any sense. How about this? How about this? Hey, the groundhog saw... Oh, no, wait a minute. Edit that out. All right, just pick it up right here. I'm glad we don't do this show live. Our program director saw his shadow over the weekend. You know what that means. 6 more weeks of nasty memos.
He's never written a nasty memo.
You know, actually,
that doesn't make any sense.
Well, no, to us it doesn't, but I thought that was funny. But yet, you know what? I know I don't actually log in to my email account at the radio station, so that may account for what I'm about to say, but I have not seen one memo since we've been here.
And I don't log in either, so I have not
seen
a memo.
Do they send any?
I think we might have heard from other people if memos are being sent.
I don't think...
No, and actually, we see them every day. Well, so wouldn't they walk into our office and tell us what's on the memo?
Well, Jimmy DeCastro doesn't send any memos. I know that. He models himself after the meetings they used to have on the Larry Sanders Show. If you watch that, it was always a hallway meeting with Artie and Larry and everybody.
Yeah. Those are the best.
Yeah, those are the best.
You get most things accomplished that way.
And our creative services guru, Todd Manley, he doesn't send memos either. And I think I know why. Because he's very creative, and he's got like he's one of these guys, million ideas a minute. And I know he wants to send about 6 or 7 memos a day. And as soon as he sits down at his computer to start typing a memo, he forgets what he was going to write. So he just gets up, walks around, has some more ideas. Then it dawns on him, wait a minute, I got to send that memo. He goes back in his office, sits down, and then he forgets again. By the way, Don Hewitt of 60 Minutes, and I quote him often, he used to say at CBS, if you have a lot of meetings, pretty soon your show looks like a meeting. Because he never liked to send memos or have meetings either. He would just sort of jump into people's office and walk down the hall. And hey, I mean, 60 Minutes worked pretty well with Don, right?
Yep.
All right, we've got, do you know about these bar crawls? We're going to talk about that at 1:35 today. There's a big bar crawl coming up that we're going to hear about. And we'll find out all about that. And apparently this one is going to involve candy. And it's going to be in Wrigleyville. So the kids are into bar crawling, all right? So stay tuned for that.
Beautiful for spacious skies.
Por tus olas de granos tan bad.
You see a little hidden Coke bottle early in this commercial, and then became apparent this was a Coke spot. One of the Super Bowl ads people are talking about today. And this is kind of interesting because, unlike other popularity-based reviews, the Kellogg School Super Bowl Advertising Review at Northwestern uses different means to judge what worked and what didn't. And here to talk about that is Tim Calkins, clinical professor of marketing. And Tim, you have like 50-some students reviewing the commercials, right?
Well, we do. So every year during the Super Bowl, we get a panel of MBA students, and we sit back and the students then evaluate every spot. So they score all of them, 60-some-odd spots. And what makes it different is that we're trying to think about, will these spots actually work to drive sales and build the brand?
So what are they rated on? What are the parameters?
Well, we have a six-part framework that we're looking at, which we call ad plan. And very, you know, very quickly, looking for attention. Does it break through? Distinction, is it a different spot? Does it stand out in some fashion? Positioning, do they give you a benefit, some reason to buy the product or service? Linkage, is there a connection between the creative idea and the brand? Amplification, what are people going to remember from the spot? And then finally, net equity, which is to say, does it fit in with what we know about the brand?
Before we get into what worked and what didn't work, according to you folks at Northwestern, when you have a game like yesterday's game where the ratings obviously start dipping, advertisers in the fourth quarter are just out of luck, aren't they?
Well, this is the sort of thing you really worry about as an advertiser, because the concern is you get a blowout game, and then everybody gets late in the fourth quarter and they start heading home, or they start spending a little more time with the chip bowl, and they don't focus on. Now, the only good news this year, though, that the game was not really that exciting, but the advertising was pretty good. So maybe it helped people in a way, because maybe people said, well, the game isn't exciting, but at least we can watch these ads.
And does it cost less to be further up and less, I mean, more? To be further up, just in case that happens?
You mean later in the game? More to be earlier. That's
yeah.
what you
well,
would think.
All of that, all well, of that is negotiated.
Can work both ways.
Yeah.
If you get a good game, you want to be in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and right? You could see people really right. think about when they want to run their spot. Like, there was no, you know, it was no coincidence that Budweiser ran their spot with the Clydesdales and the puppy very late in the game. Because they clearly said, we've got a winner here. Let's put that at the end of the game. Let's leave people thinking about that spot as they walk out of the door.
What, in your opinion, was the best, and what was the worst as far as what really sells? Again, this is not just who entertained us, who motivated us to have a different image of a company or buy something.
Exactly right. So there were a few advertisers that we gave a grade of A to. So in that group, we had, you know, the best of the group, we would say a Volkswagen, Microsoft, Heinz, Butterfinger. We'll put in that group Cheerios as well. We're going to put up in that group all in sort of spots that did a good job.
What about Radio Shack? I thought Radio Shack did a pretty good job of changing or trying to change their
image.
Yeah,
a lot of people liked that Radio Shack spot, and it was very creative and had a lot of breakthrough. I mean, that was really a creative piece.
You gave that a B.
Gave it a B. I think that's probably the right grade. You know, I don't get to vote, so mm-hmm. it's whatever the panel goes with. But I think that's the right grade because it stood out, and I think it was based on an insight about Radio Shack. To me, the one thing they didn't do, though, is they didn't tell you why you should now go to Radio Shack. Mm-hmm. What they said is, we know we're sort of an outdated store. But a little bit the message was, we're an outdated store and we're sort of shutting down.
Right.
It wasn't, here's the reason to go back and visit Radio Shack today.
What do you make of, all right, the David Beckham commercial?
Now, I knew you were going to bring that up.
Okay. He obviously, I mean, he looks great. I'm not even sure I remember what it was a commercial for.
Yeah, Marianne and her friends gave that an A+, by the way.
Yeah, A+, but we don't know what it was for. But I do remember it. So, I mean, right. It had lasting, you know, qualities for me. But I don't remember seeing anything with, like, you know, the hot babe.
Yeah, we didn't have enough women.
A woman.
Right. Yeah, that's
so
true.
Well,
does that matter?
Well, two thoughts. On the Beckham front, that's going to be a problem with linkage, we would say, because people remember Beckham and they remember, you know, that was impactful. But if you don't connect it to the brand, then that's going to be a
which
problem.
Was
it's always the risk with
H&M,
a celebrity.
Which
was, H&M, that's
H&M, right.
Because
people
H&M.
Remember the celebrity, mm-hmm. but they don't necessarily remember the brand. That's always the risk anytime you're working with.
Can you make something like that work? Could you have taken the David Beckham idea and made it work better with H&M instead of just, say, H&M at the end?
I think for sure. The thing they didn't do, which maybe they should have done, is told us a little more about the product. Right? Like, why would that be?
Yeah, if I'm managing that account, I have Beckham's underwear with the H&M logo on it, and you guys would have remembered. It's just like the yogurt commercial. Now, one of the yogurt commercials I remember because it was a little sexy, but I don't remember which yogurt it was.
Yeah, that was Danone's Oikos.
Yeah, right.
Which was a little bit, but this year, it's funny, this year was not a very risque super. It was the tonality was different.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have a lot of silly jokes, and we didn't have risque. You know, GoDaddy changed their strategy.
I missed Danica.
Right. Well, she was there. She was there running in that spot late in the game, but she wasn't Danica in any attractive attire. She was, you know, it was like Danica on steroids or something.
Right.
But what we did have this year on the Super Bowl were a lot of advertisers who went to these very high-level, motivating, inspirational themes. So, you know, the Coke ad that we had run in there just a second ago, very high order. Chevy went to that very impactful spot, very sad, really, about cancer, but that was another high-order spot. Jeep, Chrysler, so many of these brands, in a way, sort of embrace these big ideas. Bit of a shift.
What do you make of that, watching so many of those kinds of commercials, even including the Microsoft one, which was also in that vein, while people are partying and drinking beer? And I don't know, I sort of felt guilty that I was not feeling emotional about that Microsoft commercial, and I felt like I should have, but I wasn't.
Right. Well, we're so used to seeing these funny spots running on the Super Bowl, which is sort of part of the party. I think it works, though. I think the Super Bowl ads really reflect how people are feeling in the country, because we know these companies invest huge amounts of money, and we know that before they create a Super Bowl ad, they do a lot of research, surveys. So anything that's running sort of reflects a little bit of how America's feeling. And I think we're feeling maybe as a country serious and yet hopeful.
But I have a theory about this, and Professor, you may want to use my hypothesis in your classroom, that you react differently, and you have like 50-some students doing this, and they're all watching together, right? 'Cause my theory is that you react differently, especially to those emotional commercials, if you're watching in a group versus watching alone. With a group at a Super Bowl party, you may not really feel it, but if you're by yourself, it may move you. That's what I think.
I think you're right. There's no question the setting, sort of framing, has an impact on how you interpret information.
So maybe.
I think so for sure. But the interesting thing this year is that a lot of the views of these spots are actually going to come on the computer. Because what's going to happen is people are going to go on their computer, they're going to pull them up on YouTube, and they're going to watch the spots. And for a lot of these brands, they'll get a lot of the views there in sort of a private setting. It's a creative challenge. You know, how do you do well in both environments?
And when a commercial gets criticized, for example, the Volkswagen spot, women are upset because there were no female engineers in that commercial. So when you have a situation like that, can it really hurt a brand?
Oh, there's no question that if you do something on the Super Bowl that is really polarizing, it can certainly hurt your brand. You know, that's what Groupon ran into here in Chicago a couple of years back. You know, they ran that spot, and that got them into a lot of trouble. So yeah, you can get into big trouble on the Super Bowl. Now, I don't think anybody this year really did. You know, some people are unhappy at Volkswagen because they had the ratio of men to women of the engineers maybe wasn't. Mm-hmm. What some people wanted to say. I think that's probably a fair criticism. I think it's fair. But I don't think there was anything that was fundamentally offensive there.
A lot of buzz about the Coke commercial.
Yes.
And people tweeting negative things about it as well.
What, that it was like positive. Jingoistic or something?
Well, no. Both Coke and Coke and Cheerios both walked in to sort of the multicultural debate.
Mm-hmm.
So Cheerios ran a biracial family,
right?
And they'd gotten a lot of negative feedback in 2013 when they showed that same family. And so they turned around and said, oh, yeah, not only are we going to keep running it, we're going to put it on the Super Bowl because we believe that's right.
Hmm.
Some people are mad at Coke for showing people singing in different languages as sort of an idea of supporting the multiculturalism of the U.S. And I think Coke would say they're guilty as charged on that front. But I think, again, they said, we're going to walk right into this, and we believe what that sort of signifies. We're an inclusive society.
Well, it also gets people talking.
It does.
So
it does.
Is it, I mean, does it hold up any publicity is good publicity?
Not always. Not always. Yeah. Usually, most publicity is good, but not all. So, for example, SodaStream, leading up to the game, got a lot of publicity that was pretty good because it was first about Scarlett Johansson as their spokesperson, and then they got more publicity because they had a whole thing about – they had in their line, sorry, Coke and Pepsi, so they said our ad was canceled from the Super Bowl, which it wasn't. But then they got into this whole thing about the whole West Bank and where they produced. And then I think that publicity – was just more complicated for them. I don't think they were hoping for.
Let's take a quick break, and then I want to talk about the four commercials that got D's on the Northwestern Kellogg School list right after this. All right, let's find out about the worst Super Bowl commercials, at least according to the students up at Northwestern, the Kellogg School of Management. Professor Tim Calkins with us today. And you gave out some D's to four commercials. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so some of the bottom ones, CarMax, Audi, and Subway. Those were actually the three at the bottom of the
And what was it about those?
Well, different issues for each one. So the Audi spot is
Rated the worst of all.
That was at the bottom, by the panel. And now that was a spot that featured this very strange and rather disconcerting dog character. This compromise between a Doberman and a Chihuahua, and
it was rather grotesque.
And this is grotesque. And the problem with that is, you know, the point they're trying to make is, you know, compromises aren't good and we don't compromise. But the problem is you run into what we would consider a problem with amplification. So what people remember from this spot, what sticks with them, is that disturbing dog, which is really not what you want to leave people with. You want to leave them with something about your product, something about the car. But instead, all they really take away is this disturbing dog. And as a result, the message falls apart and then it drops to the bottom.
But with all the money that is spent on these, isn't there a conversation that goes on beforehand during the planning stages where somebody might ask the question, what about the disturbing dog?
Well, there had to be a lot of conversations. I mean, they're spending $4 million for 30 seconds, and then you have the production costs.
Well, there's a lot of conversations. But the thing is, these are so hard to do. And the other thing is, partly what happens is, you know, the idea is talked about, and then there's the actual finished product. And often what the idea at its early stage is sometimes changes.
Is it because there's too many chefs in the kitchen? Is it because it keeps, like Hollywood movies, that it's not just one person's vision? It gets changed so many times by so many different people.
Well, often that's the case. There's a lot of people who have to sign off on one of these, and there's a lot of people who get involved along the way. So it is really complicated. In a way, though, this advertising is sort of like art. And it's tough to create brilliant art. And sometimes it just doesn't quite work.
And Marianne, you were here Friday for the pot sticker contest that I thought of in the office. Didn't quite work out. All right. What else got a D grade there, Professor?
So CarMax ended up with a low grade on the Super Bowl. Now, that was the spot you might remember. It featured this. Everybody was clapping, although it was a slow clap. And what happened was the fellow bought his car, and then everybody was slow clapping. And that scored rather poorly with the Kellogg panel as well. I think what happened is people were just confused about why people were clapping. And then there was a question about, is a slow clap, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
I didn't get that either.
Somebody said they thought that was actually a sarcastic gesture.
Yeah, I didn't understand that.
And that sort of fell apart. Subway. Apparently what happened with Subway is they found a spot. They were able to buy a spot just at the last minute. Mm. And so then they ran a spot that they already had produced, and it just didn't measure up.
Right.
The problem on the Super Bowl is there's so many ads out there.
Yeah, the bar is set high.
Yeah, and if you don't have a spot that's got a certain amount of creative heft, it just doesn't break through.
Right.
And then it doesn't help you very
much. And then was there one more we didn't get to on the D list here? Not the Dean's list, but the D list.
The QuickBooks?
QuickBooks ended up also very low. Yeah, so the QuickBooks, this was... You know, sort of the idea here was, I guess, good in theory, but it just didn't play out for them. You know, the idea was they were going to use their spot to support another little company. But the problem was they support the other little company, and then it all gets to be sort of a creative jumble.
And before you leave, during the break, we were talking about a subtle image in that Coke commercial. Fill us in on that, Tim.
Well, so one of the interesting things is in that Coke spot, there's a lot of different imagery. Apparently in that spot, if you really look closely, you can see there's a same-sex couple with a child in there. That's one of the shots. And the interesting thing is, if you don't notice it, it just sort of goes by. But if you're looking for it, you're like, now that's an interesting move to show that on the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people say that what's happening here is Coke's a big sponsor of the Sochi Games. And, of course, that's got Coke a little bit into trouble, given all the political views of the Russian establishment. So, in theory, the imagery then in the Super Bowl ad is actually very important, because that, in a way, is Coke reaching out to say, we support, we understand, we're sympathetic to the cause, even though we know we can't say that when we're actually over there in
Russia.
Yeah,
they can't run that during the games.
Yeah,
right?
You couldn't run that, because then people would say, oh, you're making a political statement.
Right.
So what they do is they go to instead the biggest advertising platform of the year on the Super Bowl, and they run it there.
That's
again,
interesting.
It's hidden, but when you look for it, it's there, and it's every shot people are thinking about on these.
I'll tell you, there's a lot of talk and a lot of articles about the Super Bowl commercials the day after, but what you do at Northwestern is, I think, the most interesting and fascinating. Thanks for sharing with us.
Well, thank you.
Tim Calkins, professor of marketing there at the Kellogg School at Northwestern. And, you know, next year, if you want to put students in one room and then me in another to represent people watching by themselves to give that point of view, I'm happy to go up to Evanston.
Oh, well, very good. We'll put you down for it.
He'll just have to say no to the party invitation.
That's it. It's Rod and Marciano in the afternoon. I am really upset about something, and I haven't mentioned this to anybody, but I'm going to mention it now. You know that.
Not even me?
No, I haven't mentioned this to you. You know, over the years, and I guess it's been, I think going back to when I was working on a noon newscast on Channel 5 in 1989 or 1990, I started doing a little essay at the end of the news, whatever broadcast I was doing, called One More Thing. And it was really designed so we didn't have to always do one of those stupid stories about the water skiing squirrel or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun for me because I got to write a minute on anything, could be fun, could be serious, whatever, little essay. So, and I took it with me wherever I went.
Jobs.
Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of jobs.
You didn't take the essay with you. You just took
tried to do
the
different
idea
essays, yes.
Of doing an essay.
Yeah, I thought if I did the same essay night after night, year after year, on whatever station I'm at, that probably would not work.
Get you fired.
So it seemed to work well, and, you know, along the way, picked up an award or two, and everybody was happy, and it was challenging but fun. It's kind of like writing a column, you know. And from time to time, people came to me with the idea, why don't you put together a book of One More Things? And I thought, well, it's not a bad idea, but because I'm disorganized and I never kept a good system of keeping them all, and I did it at Channel 11, too, when I was doing Chicago Tonight. So they exist in various computers here and there, and because of that and because I'm basically lazy and have no discipline, I never thought, yeah, I'll sit down and do it. But as the years have gone on, I've thought more and more, yeah, maybe that is a good idea, do a book, One More Thing. And then I pick up the New York Times the other day, and I read a review of a book by B.J. Novak called One More Thing. And
really?
Apparently, yeah, B.J. Novak, he writes funny stories, and he put together something called One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories by B.J. Novak.
There you go again.
Yeah.
Giving out a great idea and not acting on it.
A great title, yeah.
But you know what? You can still make it Bob Surratt's One More Thing.
I don't want to do it now.
You didn't want to do it before. Okay, can I help you out here? I keep saying this to you every time you get a new job. Take your stuff with you, because you will say to me, oh, yeah, but I know Hal. And Hal will send me copies of any stories that I ever want. But then Hal gets fired. And then you don't have Hal anymore.
You're right.
All your stuff is scattered everywhere.
B.J. Novak, by the way, writes for, or he has written for The Office, and he's done some stand-up comedy. So most of what's in this book, it's not really nonfiction essays, which is what I've been doing. But still, it's he's got the title now. One More Thing.
But I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised because that's something that people say all the time. Hey, one more thing. So I don't think he stole it from you. But
well, no,
do
I'm
you
not saying
sue him.
I'm not saying he stole it from me, but I'm just irritated that there's a book now with that title.
Just get working on your book.
Well, I'll call it something else.
Call it something else.
Not One More Thing.
Yeah. Or call it A Few More Things. Many More Things.
No.
Two More Things.
I don't know.
Yeah. Just, or Bob Surratt's One More Thing.
Just aggravated. And speaking of aggravation, you have a problem too today. You want to talk about this?
I don't know.
This is a problem that I know about.
Yes.
Because you decided last night to catch up on, was it season two?
It was.
Of that ridiculous series? What was it?
It was a whole chain of circumstances
that
led to this.
I know,
so
but what,
it was
what
Super Bowl.
What,
we were invited to a party.
Yeah.
And Michael, my son, was doing a little editing project for me that he thought, and he announced, it's going to take 1 hour, and I'm not putting any more than 1 hour into this because I have homework. Well, 7 hours afterwards, he's still working on the little project, which is a little videotape of his younger sister's basketball games. And of course, the problem Michael has is that once he starts on something, he can't not make it as good as it can be.
He's like, that's your problem, too. You get obsessed with
right.
something.
Right. So he and I was saying, just string the clips together, please. But, you know, he's putting music to it. He's making it. He's slow-mo-ing it. And he's looking at 160 clips, he said. I didn't know
yeah,
I shot
you,
so
you,
much.
You overshoot. But you didn't think it would be that big a project when you
no,
gave it to him.
Right? But by the time 7 hours went by, after we were done with the Super Bowl party, all he had wanted to do, the only thing he had wanted to do all weekend, the reason he came to our house was to finish the second season of American Horror Stories.
And we were at a neighbor's Super Bowl party, and then by the time we got back, he's still working on the video.
He was still working on the video.
And then you wanted to see that
and
ridiculous
then,
program.
At 11:30, we had two episodes left of the second season. Yeah. And it was really well worth it. But
Was it worth it?
I don't know if I'm going to say that today.
Yeah.
Because
at the time, it was a great idea.
Because we started watching at about 11:45.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't get to bed till like 2:30. And then I was nervous about getting up because I had to get up for an appointment. And I slept, I think, a little bit over 3 hours is what, not even 4 hours.
Hey, you got to suck it up.
And
be glad you never did a morning show. That happens a lot when you're working mornings.
I cannot be on such little sleep.
I need a little more. No, you can't.
Yeah. I am losing my mind. I don't know what to do because, you know, and also I'm trying to, okay, this is a perfect example. So this is like day five. I think it is day five of trying to not eat meat.
God.
What is wrong with me? So today, I don't know if it's because I'm super sleep deprived, but all I can think of is a bloody steak. That's all I can think about. And then I had brown rice and tofu for lunch. And as soon as I was done eating it, all I could think of was a bloody steak. I wasn't even hungry. I just wanted blood.
I'm staying as far away from you as I possibly can. As
if,
soon as
you should,
the
because
show ends
I might go
here.
For your neck.
Yeah. I can tell you're taking this out on me.
Because you don't let me sleep. That's part
that
of the problem.
Had nothing to do with your lack of sleep last
night. No, not last night. But normally you don't let me sleep because you are so loud. When you're reading a paper, it's like this is what it sounds like.
How about when I'm reading the book I've been reading lately at night?
I don't know.
I read like
you,
two
you
pages and then
pages,
I fall asleep.
You flip the pages like this. I always think, am I or am I not always turning to you and saying, are you angry?
But not when I'm reading. When I'm reading a paper, okay, I admit sometimes I'll tear things out and that can be noisy. But not when I'm reading a book. I'm reading a book and then I fall asleep. That's not noisy.
You flip pages violently. You are loud. I need another
house.
I'm going to a different area, or you can leave. I don't know. I can't even tell you what I'm going to do.
Don't do. You know what? Take the advice you give me. Take the advice you give me when I'm sick, and you tell me, don't judge anything. Don't make any decisions. Don't form an opinion about anybody because you're not well. You're not right. So I would say to you,
I'm dangerous.
While
today.
You're in this condition, don't try to determine whether or not I'm the cause of your sleeping problems. Don't try to judge how good a husband I am. Just clear your mind of all of that, okay?
But when I said a little while ago, I said, Bob, I'm going to bed. I'm going to go on a sleep diet tonight. I'm going to bed like before 10 o'clock, 9:30. You got so angry because you take it personally that I would go to sleep early.
Because you're blaming me for your sleep troubles.
No, I'm not blaming you. Yeah, I'm just saying tonight I really need to sleep.
Yeah, and most nights when you don't get to sleep on time, you blame me too, and it's not your fault. By the way,
best husband ever.
Thank you very much.
What? I shouldn't judge you, though.
Well, if it's positive, you can't. Oh. Let's get healthy, shall we? North Shore University Health Systems cardiologist, Dr. Justin Levesay, joins us now to talk about, it's Heart Health Month, isn't
it? It's February.
How you doing, Doc?
I'm doing great, thanks.
We have a couple of things to get to with you. First, since we've been talking about lack of sleep, why don't we start with that? When you don't get enough sleep, the effect on the body can be a lot more than just your barking at your husband, correct?
Oh, please.
Absolutely.
You're so passive aggressive. Jeez.
Yeah, it's very well established that the lack of sleep is, has very deleterious health effects.
This business about inflammation in the arteries is something we hear about, we read about in connection with everything from lack of sleep to proper oral hygiene. And there was something very interesting circulating around the internet last week about the cause of heart disease and how we're fixated on saturated fat and cholesterol when actually we should be more concerned with the foods and other causes that lead to artery inflammation. What's your take on all this?
Well, it's kind of a mixed picture, and I know the article to which you're referring because at least once or twice a month I have a patient who sends me this and says, have you ever seen this? This is amazing. I think that the article that you're referring to makes some valid points, for sure. I think there are some other aspects of it that aren't completely scientifically accurate, and some of the recommendations are actually, in my opinion, irresponsible. I do think that there's no question about the fact, and this has been validated, that inflammation is intimately related to the development of heart disease. It's not a new concept. It's something that was being looked at back in the 1960s. If you remember the famous Linus Pauling, he did some work in this regard with vitamin C. Throughout the 80s and 90s, people like Brian Ketter and Paul Ridker did a lot of research on this, and there's just no question that inflammation is very important to the development of coronary disease. And you mentioned oral hygiene, and people who have gum disease have a chronic low-grade inflammation, and it has absolutely been linked to developing heart problems down the line.
So if you correct that problem, say, for example, with your gums, does that then correct or reverse the inflammation problem going on in the rest of your body?
It may. I mean, if that's the sole cause of the inflammation in your body, absolutely. And, reversing heart disease is not so easy. We don't have Drano yet, but certainly it will stop the process from continuing.
Is there any way to have any sort of reversal
of heart disease?
Yes.
When it comes to blockages of the coronary arteries, the only thing that's ever been validated to actually stabilize or reverse blockages in your coronary arteries are statins, the group of drugs called statins, which is the one issue that I take with the article that you're referencing is the physician who wrote it actually recommends that everyone stop taking statins. One thing about statins is, everyone thinks that statins only reduce cholesterol in your bloodstream, and they certainly do that. But the effect is much greater than just reducing cholesterol. And one of the beneficial effects of statins is that they're anti-inflammatory, and they actually serve to reduce inflammation.
And what have you reduced inflammation by not eating the foods that cause it? Wouldn't that be a better solution than having to take medication in order to keep eating the foods that cause inflammation?
Without question. I mean, I don't think anyone, you know, there are proponents of putting everyone on statins. I'm not in that camp at all, only for people who have established disease or a lot of risk factors. But I think you're absolutely correct that eating well and exercising to reduce inflammation and improve cardiovascular health is the first thing that everyone should be doing. You know, the question of how to do that is a little bit more complicated.
What role does sugar play in heart disease? What role do vegetable oils like soybean, corn, and sunflower oil found in processed foods play in heart disease?
Well, there's certainly evidence to suggest that highly refined sugars, which, you know, if you look at the foods that are readily available and that a lot of people eat in our society, and you look at the ingredients, it looks like a chemistry project. And these things are, you know, it's high fructose corn syrup and lots of heavily refined sugars. And certainly there's an association between inflammation with eating these sorts of foods. And you're much better off eating, you know, simple, natural foods. Eat real food. Eat whole grains rather than, you know, highly processed carbohydrate.
What do you make of this statement that this doctor, this heart surgeon who posted the article says, while we savor the tantalizing taste of a sweet roll, our bodies respond alarmingly as if a foreign invader arrived declaring war. Foods loaded with sugars and simple carbs or processed with omega-6 oils for long shelf life have been the mainstay of the American diet for six decades, and these foods have been slowly poisoning everyone.
Well, I think that, to me, that sounds like maybe a little bit hyperbolic, but I can't disagree with him. I don't think that, you know, when you eat a sweet roll that's got highly refined sugar and omega-6s basically come from vegetable oil. You know, it causes a very high spike of glucose in your bloodstream, which your pancreas then needs to secrete large amounts of insulin. It leads to fat deposition, to becoming obese, and fat cells are not just sitting there holding fat. Fat cells are actively doing things in your body, including increasing hunger and releasing inflammatory cytokines that can cause problems.
So what I don't understand is why do so many doctors, when something like this comes out that is like so in your face and they're putting it out there and it is maybe on the verge of radical, however, it could really help people if they change their way of thinking. Why? I always feel like the Medical Association is the Heart Association is always putting on the brakes. Why mm-hmm. not go all out there? And what's happened many times is that years later, it's proven to be true.
It certainly that happens, and also there are things that are proven not to be true. And unfortunately, you know, we need to rely on evidence, not on conjecture. And I'm not taking issue with the fact that Dr. Lundell may have a point with some of this. Certainly, I think that the American diet and the diet in a lot of developing countries is not good for us, and there's no question about that. And I don't think that anyone is going to take issue with that. The assertion that cholesterol has nothing to do with heart disease, on the other hand, is not true. It's not the only factor in heart disease. That's for darn sure. And I think, was there a period of time when, you know, in the 80s where eating low-fat diets was all the craze and, you know, everything that you went and looked at in the grocery store was no-fat or low-fat? I don't think that that's, you know, I think that was an overreaction to the initial studies that showed a link between cholesterol and heart disease. You know, ultimately, I think we all need to exhibit a little bit of common sense with regards to what we eat. And eat real foods, eat a lot of vegetables, fruits. You know, animal protein is fine, but you can't overdo it. Just as eating sweet rolls is not good for you, I don't think that eating bacon every day is good for you either.
Moderation.
There's moderation in everything.
Moderation. Good to get another take on this article that's been circulating around the internet by Dr. Dwight Lundell. Our thanks, as always, to cardiologists from North Shore University Health Systems, Dr. Justin Levesay. And I've got an apple now I'm going to eat after we hang up, Doc.
Good job.
I'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Okay. Candyman.
The Candyman.
Ooh, the Candyman can.
The candy-
Yeah, we're going to be ODing on chocolate before Valentine's Day, as it turns out. Something kind of interesting going on next Saturday in the Lakeview area. And here with us to talk about it, the president of Chicago Sport and Social Club, Jason Erkes. Jason, how you doing?
Good, guys. How are you?
We're good. Explain again to folks who don't know what the Chicago Sport and Social Club is.
Sure. We run sports leagues and plan really fun events like the Candy Crush that I'm here to talk about today. But we do all the sports leagues up and on the lakefront for young professionals after work and on weekends. Volleyball, softball. I know you're a big softball player, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Flag football, soccer, pretty much anything you can think of. We try to keep people busy and active.
You know, I used to play a lot of touch football. I never played flag, though. That's a fun game.
Yeah, most of our football is flag. You know, it's co-ed, so we like the interaction. We got to grab each other.
Yeah, I know. I miss all like these that. All these fun trends. Started after I left the lakefront area in the city.
I don't know if we want to talk about football today, though.
No. Explain why you have walked in here with a gigantic, 15-pound piece of chocolate.
A 15-pound chocolate bar for you guys to tell you how big, this is the word big, the Candy Crush Crawl is going to be this Saturday. We are decking out 7 Wrigleyville bars in Candyland-type themes where people are going to come out and go bar to bar with great drink specials, and each bar has a different candy theme. One's chocolate, one's carnival candy, Lover's Lane, which is all Valentine's Day-inspired candy, and it's the crush aspect of the Candy Crush Crawl. It's a week before Valentine's Day, so you can come out and find your crush.
So this is...
Oh, I get it. Okay, wait a minute.
It's a takeoff on the pub crawl, right?
Yeah, it is a pub crawl, and we figured we'd deck all the bars out and make sure that everybody got some candy this Valentine's Day.
So this is nothing to do with those Facebook games.
Nothing to do with that whatsoever.
Because that's a little confusing. So when I'm getting invitations for a Candy Crush crawl, this is a really live thing that I can actually go
into. You get invitations for the Candy Crush Saga, which is a video game. This is a pub crawl.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, yeah. And I'm glad because I want to go to this. I want to go to this. The other thing is a video game that you play on Facebook play.
Our crush aspect is a little different. It's a Saturday before Valentine's Day. We've invited a lot of single people out, and you know, we want people to crush a little bit. Come out and see if you can meet someone before the weekend after.
All right, so what are the qualifications? I mean, if somebody wants to be part of this Saturday there in the Lakeview neighborhood, what do they have to do, and what criteria do they have to meet?
Well, they have to be fun, first of all. That's a very important qualification. So
they're listening to us now, they're fun.
Make the cut, but yes. CandyCrushCrawl.com is our website. You can go sign up, and you get a goodie bag, which, of course, you can load with candy throughout the day, so you're going home basically with a Halloween bag filled with candy.
We won't tell the heart surgeon that was on a little while ago.
Yeah, right.
About the candy.
Come on, there's all kind of healing powers of chocolate, I thought.
Okay. That's right.
Wait a minute. Keep going. Candy
CandyCrushCrawl.com.
CandyCrushCrawl.com. Okay. And then what do they have to do?
They just register for the event. And then on Saturday morning, they'll show up. They'll get a little badge that'll tell them kind of like a Candyland board that'll tell them which bars are participating. They're all in one block there. So even if it's cold outside, you don't have very far to walk. And we want people to come out and have a good time.
That was a good game. Did you ever play that as a kid?
Yeah.
Candyland.
Yeah.
Bob, did you ever play that?
No.
What did you play? Parcheesi?
Pick up sticks.
Okay.
The black and white version of it.
So people don't have to start off in one place.
No, absolutely not. They register beforehand.
Is there like a map?
Yeah,
then?
We give them a little a lanyard and a little kind of a cheat sheet of what bars are participating and what the theme of each bar is. As I said, each one has a different theme. We're decking them out with decorations. And when I say an obscene amount of candy, my office warehouse right now is stocked with about 3,000 pounds.
3,000
of 50 pounds. Different types of candy. I mean, from Tootsies to Lemon Heads to chocolate. I mean, you name it, we've got it.
Yeah, it's 7 bars, right?
Yes.
Do you walk to each bar or do you
drive?
They're
all right next to each other. They're all on the block right there on Clark Street. So, you know, just go to one, have a drink, indulge in some goodies, and then pack it up and go next door.
But you have no less than 7 drinks that night, right?
Well,
because
that's up
to you're having a drink at every bar, right?
There are some great drink specials and shot specials. Of course, some candy-flavored shots and things like that.
But, we're going to take a picture with Jason and the special candy bar, a custom Serrata Murciano chocolate bar. And let me just warn you, Jason, if I find out or see anywhere online Rush Limbaugh holding up the Rush Limbaugh chocolate bar, I'm going to be very annoyed.
Well, his candy bar will not say Surratt Marciano.
Okay, good.
This is custom made for you guys.
All right.
We'll post that at Facebook. And then getting through this winter, and by the way, when it does finally turn warm again, and hopefully it'll happen eventually, this spring, people are really going to be going nuts. I mean, everybody's just got this feeling that they're sick of being inside, and no matter what the weather is now, they just want to get out there. So are you going to be seeing a great demand for your spring and summer events soon?
Yeah, we hope so. I mean, the weather's been terrible this winter. We, of course, do stuff indoors, but spring is a big season. People can't wait to get outside. And
right.
You know, even though the weather might not still be great outside when we start, people get out there. We open spring registration next week, actually, at chicagosocial.com for softball and flag football. And even beach volleyball registration opens soon. So it gives people something to look forward to when the weather breaks and their chance to get outside and enjoy the 7 or 8 months of nice weather we get here.
And the way that
what keeps us living here.
Yeah.
The way that works, the spring registration for all these sports, is you just sign up. You don't have to be great at anything.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's really for social reasons and just to have fun.
Yeah. Social sports right now is a huge trend across the country. People just want to go out after work or on the weekends, have fun with their friends. You pick your sport. You pick the day of the week you want to sign up for, and you show up. We take care of the rest.
Okay.
That's,
so
for the great service.
Young,
love that.
Single, love to mingle crowd. You've got this event here on Saturday in Wrigleyville, and you go to candycrushcrawl.com for
Bob,
all the information on that.
Where are you getting started? Which place?
I'm looking at the
barley
list.
Barleycorn, maybe?
Barleycorn. I remember Barleycorn. Well, Sluggers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the Cubby Bear.
We actually have this monstrous pinata that we had made that's going to kind of kick things off. We're going to break the pinata to kind of start the crawl. It's huge.
All right.
Everything we're doing is oversized here.
And then,
that's going to be where? Where's the piñata?
That's going to be at Old Crow Smokehouse.
Okay.
And if you're interested in some of these other upcoming events, what's the website again, Jason?
Chicagosocial.com.
Jason Erkes, always fun to chat with you. Good luck Saturday night with the big Candy Crush crawl. Okay,
thank you guys very much.
I think I'm suffering from a sugar high right now just looking at that gigantic chocolate bar.
I know you can't wait to get into it. We need a hammer, a chisel.
Yeah, okay. Facebook.com/Surratt and Marciano will have that photo up there momentarily of the, how many pounds does that chocolate bar weigh? Like 15 or something?
15 pounds.
Which is what you would gain in weight if you ate that.
I wonder what you would gain in weight. I bet you it's different for different people. But it is a good amount to use as weights if you want to do, like, instead of dumbbells.
Do some curls with it, you mean?
Do some curls, yeah.
This is very scary. Did you hear about this? And there are stories today about the age of convenient log-ons nearing an end. That's the upshot of the continuing wave of reports of hackers stealing consumer data from various retailers and tech companies. So this is what security experts are saying now. Forget the simple password. Yahoo is the latest example. Last week, data thieves gained unauthorized access to an undisclosed number of Yahoo mail users' account credentials. Yahoo spokeswoman DJ Anderson emphasized the hackers did not penetrate Yahoo's network defenses. Instead, they stole data from a third-party website that allows the use of Yahoo email addresses to create customer accounts. And this is what's scary. And Yahoo is contacting victims individually and advising them to change their passwords and to use distinctive passwords for any online accounts tied to Yahoo Mail. It's important for users to understand never to use the same password on multiple sites or services. And we all do that because it helps us remember these darn passwords.
Yeah, how do you remember everything? You would have to look it up. I mean,
people ignore that advice, and now you can't anymore.
I'm sure that I have at least 30 places where I have to put in a password. How do you remember 30 different?
And then people change them too. Like at the office, at work, many companies will frequently.
Force you.
Yeah.
Well, here we are forced.
Yeah, and at Fox they did it too. Just when you remember your password, you have to change it. Many consumers use the same email address and password to create financial transaction accounts across multiple websites. Cyber criminals know this and are experts at correlating valid email accounts with third-party services. This enables them to steal from financial accounts and carry out a variety of other scams. One online security analyst said, the simple username and password just is not an option any longer. It's obvious that neither consumers nor the companies collecting this data are up to the challenge of keeping the data secure. Latest Yahoo breach follows disclosures of email addresses stolen from Target, Neiman Marcus, and Michaels. And last year, similar data was stolen from Adobe, Yahoo, LinkedIn, and hundreds of other organizations. Another security consultant says attackers are focusing on valuable data in defined areas. It's much easier to attack large collections of consumer data instead of having to work harder attacking consumers individually. It's frightening, isn't it?
It is really, really scary. And when I think about bank accounts, I mean, I have some bank accounts that have made it so difficult for me in terms of the password and case sensitive and include this and that. And then other bank accounts where I'm shocked that my password could be as simple as it is. It doesn't make sense.
Have a password that is, well, don't they usually rate it now when you put in a password?
Yeah, strong or weak.
Right. So make sure it's strong.
I keep changing it, but yeah.
Was it worth it for the state of Illinois to spend money on a Super Bowl commercial? What did we say, 30 seconds for $4 million? And they had an Illinois tourism spot at halftime showing an Abe Lincoln figurine vacationing across the state. Got pretty good reviews. I didn't see it, but I hear that spot was pretty good. Abe ziplining, Abe in Willis Tower, Abe next to a statue of Abe. I did see the WeatherTech commercial. They're local. They're out of Bolingbrook, and they did a commercial that basically touted the fact that the car floor mats they make are made in America. I thought that was effective. Or let's put it this way. I remembered it was WeatherTech after the commercial. You know how sometimes you're entertained by those spots, but you don't know what they're for. You don't remember. If I were in the market,
yeah.
You know how to remember that? Remember the song, If I Were a Rich Man. The song isn't If I Was a Rich Man, if I Were a Rich Man from Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, okay, that's your trick.
If I were on the market for a floor mat, a car floor mat, and I had a choice, I probably would seek out WeatherTech, and there may be others made in America, but I am now very conscious of WeatherTech made in America because of that commercial.
How did our expert panel rate that one? Do we know?
They can't grade everything. There's too many commercials. So that was not among the best or the worst, because there wasn't anything really out of the box about the way they presented that commercial. It was just a good, effective commercial.
It was too hard to be at a party and talking to people and then also be paying attention to the commercials.
Certainly didn't want to pay attention to the game, and the commercials were the only thing to watch for. But then after a while, if you're at a party, people are just wandering around, and they're not even watching. The television is really in the background at that point by the third quarter, right?
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting, and we'll pass that along. We have the Celebrity Report to the Nation coming up at 2:35 today, and we'll get some Super Bowl ratings, pass them along to you. At 2:05 today, this is going to be interesting, Harvey Levin, Mr. TMZ. That's a very unique show. And, of course, Harvey's the guy up there at the desk with his, what is it? He has like a thermos or a a container
cup of coffee
of
or something, or what tea
he's drinking,
or something.
And everybody's reporting on these video clips from celebrities. And we'll talk to him about a few things, including the tragic death of Philip Seymour Hoffman, and also the Woody Allen story. What's going on with that? We'll get
everybody's
the
talking about that.
TMZ take on that at 2:05, and perhaps a Super Bowl tidbit. People seem to have enjoyed Bruno Mars.
Yes.
And the Chili Peppers.
Very nice.
It was different because they didn't go for a older act this time.
No, it was really great and cool.
He was channeling James Brown, wasn't he?
And Michael Jackson.
Yeah, right. He's been open about that. He's been open about doing that.
He reminds me so much of Janelle Monáe. She dances like Bruno Mars and Michael Jackson and James Brown.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't seen her in concert?
No. Oh, is that who you went to see?
Mm-hmm.
And she, what does she look like? Doesn't she have a strange hairdo?
She looks a
hairdo?
Little bit like Bruno Mars.
She does, yeah.
She does.
Yeah.
A little bit.
All right. We also, as always, we'll open up our mailbox and examine your feedback. Remember, you can text us at 24720, and that Facebook page is facebook.com/Sarat and Murciano. All those entertainment news shows on television look alike, except for one. TMZ, and the ringleader and head of the TMZ empire, is with us this afternoon. Let's say hello to Harvey Levin.
Hey, Harvey.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
It's good afternoon here.
Great.
But I know you're just waking up out west. Well, actually, not waking up.
Are you kidding me?
I know.
I was up way before you, I promise.
Yeah, no, I know. You get the shows together pretty early, and then we see TMZ live here at 2 o'clock, and then the TMZ program at 5 on Fox 32. Let's begin.
Thank you, by the way, for that.
Anytime. Let's begin with, and by the way, I enjoy the way you always look like you've just come back from the gym, and you're always consuming a nice liquid beverage on the show. I get a kick
just
out
trying,
of that.
Just trying to stay awake.
Let's talk about the sad news about Philip Seymour Hoffman. Harvey, did Hollywood insiders believe he had conquered his addiction problems?
Well, look, we broke a story last May that he had gone back to rehab voluntarily because he felt he was slipping back into the world of heroin, and we found out that the people he had confided in were saying that his big fear was he would start using needles again. Hmm. And that's why he did it, because he knew that would take him down a very dark path. And that path did indeed occur, because, you know, the cops found 50 bags, that some of which had heroin in it and some of which were empty, in the apartment. He had a needle in his left arm. There is now at least one witness who says that he saw Hoffman the night before at an ATM with these two guys carrying, a backpack type thing, which looked like he might have been making some kind of a drug deal. And cops are now looking at the surveillance video to see if that bears fruit. But whatever it is, it just got the best of him, it seems.
Harvey, following TMZ online like I do day and night, I see that you guys have the story about the actual strain of heroin possibly being a culprit here as well, a deadly form of heroin. Tell us about that.
There is a particular strain of heroin that has been making its way around the East Coast. The street names are Theraflu, Bud Ice, 24K. This is a really potent potent drug. It's got the drug in it called fentanyl, which is often used for terminal cancer patients. It's 100 times more powerful than morphine. What it can do is shut down the respiratory system. And it has been responsible for 22 deaths in Pennsylvania, 19 in Rhode Island, 5 in Long Island, and that's all in January. Now, cops don't know if that drug made its way into his apartment, but it's one of the things they're looking at. The toxicology report will show it. But that is going to take weeks before before we know.
Man, what a tragedy. And many of us around Chicago know him a little bit because of his time here at the Goodman. Bob Falls directed him, and by all accounts, he was a great person to work with and a friendly and engaging man. I don't know if you ever
had a hugely successful actor.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, everybody thinks of him in Capote, but this guy, you know, was in just enormous films. Film after film after film, not necessarily as a leading man, or even the leading role, but big roles and consistent roles. This guy had an amazing career.
I even enjoyed him in a couple of films. And anybody who has an appreciation for music and radio, if you haven't seen him in Pirate Radio, and if you never saw Almost Famous, he's just marvelous.
So good in Almost Famous. Oh, my God. So good.
Let's talk about the other big showbiz story, Woody Allen. Now, explain this, Harvey. This is an old story, but it's back again because of the New York Times letter that Woody Allen's daughter wrote, correct?
Well, not exactly. I mean, it's back again because he won an award at the Golden Globes where a lot of stars paid homage to him. And it did not sit well with some of his kids. His son, Ronan Farrow, tweeted right after Woody won the award, essentially saying, gee, they didn't mention the fact that he molested my sister. Now, she has made this claim before but never been specific. So, over the weekend, she released a letter to the New York Times detailing what she says is the abuse, and very specific, that he had taken her into the attic at their house when she was seven and had done all sorts of things, including burying his face in her naked crotch. And it was very specific. We got this video that we put up on the website over the weekend where Woody was coming out of a New York Knicks game at Madison Square Garden, and this was just hours after this letter had been posted, and to us, it looks like he had no idea about this letter, and he turned to one of his daughters, and his daughters, it looks to us like she may have pulled this letter up, or the New York Times article, up on her phone, and he just goes pale. But he's come out and he said this is all a lie, it's despicable, and he's going to say something about it. He has not yet said anything about it, but this is by no means over in that family.
And when this first surfaced, it did not go to court. And then from Woody Allen's side, his people said that she could not differentiate fact from fantasy. And there were other counterclaims made, we should say.
Yeah, no. I mean, look, he's never been charged. He's never been convicted. This came up in their child custody dispute, but this is something she has never let go. And clearly she believes it, clearly Ronan believes it, and clearly Woody says it's not true.
And isn't this the way that it usually happens with victims of sexual assault? I mean, she was a little kid. She's now grown up. She's probably had a lot of therapy.
She's been saying this for a while now. She's just never been specific. And I think this whole Golden Globe thing is what triggered it.
Harvey Levin, you are the best. Hey, by the way, you went to school here in Chicago, didn't you?
I did. Every time that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you guys. I just love Chicago so much. I love it so much. And, yeah, I went to the University of Chicago Law School. And whenever I come back, it's just such a beautiful, wonderful city. I love your city.
You have a lot of fans here. You know that.
Yeah, in fact, the temperature here is like in the mid-80s today, Harvey. I don't know what it is out there in Hollywood. But.
Yeah, no way. You know what? Your nose is growing. No way.
Yeah, if the weather was nice here all year round, we'd have too many people living here. So that's why we like it cold sometimes.
All I can tell you is when I was a poor law student, I had to walk across the Midway in Hyde Park, and the temperature would drop like 40 degrees. And every time I think about it, I literally get cold just thinking about that.
And by the way, with your background in law and covering so many stories like the Woody Allen story, Justin Bieber, the law studies come in handy, don't they?
Every day, every hour.
All right, it's TMZ live at 2 o'clock. It's on now at Fox 32, and then TMZ at 5 p.m. today. Harvey Levin, good to catch up with you, Harvey.
It's good talking to you guys. We'll see you.
Got a crush on you, sweetie pie.
Yeah, that's a good line.
All the day and night time. Hear me sigh.
Let's open up the Love Lab, shall we? And talk about some pickup lines. We came across this list of cheesy lines to avoid. And once again, and we talked to Dr. Laura Berman about this. This came from a website in the UK, the Daily Mail. They are really obsessed with these topics over there in England. And like we were saying to Dr. Berman, it seems as though they were repressed for so long. They're making up for lost time now.
Right. They talk about everything.
All right. Well, how are we gonna work this now? These are lines that guys would try out on women?
How about if you tell me if you have ever done one of these or would ever?
Or I could try some of the lines out on you, see if it would work.
Well, why don't you do that?
Marianne, I like your dress, but it would look better on my bedroom floor.
Well, Bob, since since we're not sleeping in the same bedroom anymore, because I want to get some sleep... one's not going to work. Okay, if somebody said that to me and I wasn't already married to that person, I would just think, you are creepy. You're creeping me out.
Yeah, that's what I would think. I don't think I'd have the guts to use that line either.
As a pickup line?
Well, what about this one?
That's a little bit...
How about this one? Is your father a thief? Because he must have stolen your eyes from heaven.
I would think that you're a creep.
There must be one on the list that'll work here.
There's something wrong with you.
And I don't know if I would be curious to hear from a female who can give us a line that really worked. I think that would be helpful to guys. 312-981-7200. Oh, how about this line? Are you tired? You must be, because you've been running around my mind all night. These are hokey.
Hokey?
Yeah.
That's what that would be my reaction to that one.
Oh, I like this one. Tell me if you'd see the amusement in this. Hey, you look like a parking ticket because you've got fine written all over you.
Oh, my God. That one, I would really be creeped out.
You wouldn't be impressed?
No,
I'd be really
creeped.
You wouldn't laugh? You wouldn't feel flattered? No?
No, I'd be creeped out.
How about this one? No, that one's no good. Do you believe in love at first sight, or should I walk past you again? See, I wouldn't be afraid to try that line.
Yeah, that one is probably.
You'd laugh, right?
Oh, yeah. I might laugh at that one. I think that one is probably the only one. I haven't read all of them yet.
Well, you have to wait and let me deliver them.
Okay.
Because if you just read them, that's...
Oh, okay.
They've got to be put into action. If I could rewrite the alphabet, I would put you and I together. That's too forward. I'd feel funny using that line.
I would feel like he used that line a lot of times before.
Here's one that I don't think any guy would use this line unless they had like 100 beers. But I must admit, it's kind of funny. I'm looking for a treasure. Can I have a look around your chest? Would that ever work? Is there any circumstance?
No, there's no way. Unless she's really drunk, and then I don't know. I can't imagine, but it could work, I guess. But not for most people.
Hi, Len. What do you got for us?
Hey, how much does a polar bear weigh? Just enough to break the ice.
Has that line been used?
Not by me.
Do we know the success rate?
It's one of my son's pickup lines. So
well, that's what the kids are saying these days.
Yeah.
How much does a polar bear weigh?
Hey, you know what? I like this one that we got.
Thanks, Len.
You're welcome.
Are you married now, Len?
He's off. He's gone. I got this.
I was just going to say, hopefully you are, because you don't want to be playing this game. It's too hard.
Hey, baby, I've got an MBA, a major bank account.
Come on.
How about this one?
I think women should be trying to pick up guys more. I'm embarrassed with most of these.
What are you doing for sex later?
Oh, please. That's not very creative, is it?
Is it hot in here, or is it you?
That's stupid.
Come on. People are sending texts, and they're funny.
Yeah, but I want to know about something that worked.
If I told you you have a nice body, would you hold it against me?
That's an old one. I think I heard that.
I've never heard that one.
In the 70s at Butch's and the shenanigans on Division Street.
Check out this one from Mike in Oak Lawn. This one has worked for me a couple of times.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
It worked for Mike? Yeah.
Okay.
He says, this one has worked for me.
Okay, I got nervous there for a minute.
Yeah, you thought it was me. Pardon me for being so forward, but hi.
I like that.
I like that, too.
I like you're sitting in a bar. Let's try this. All right, you're sitting in a bar. Okay, maybe you're talking to somebody or minding your own business, and I come up to you and I say, excuse me, pardon me for being so forward, but hi. Marianne, don't take off your sweater. What are you doing? Oh, boy, that really worked. Hey, Tom, go ahead. You're on.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Marianne. How are you today?
Hi, great. How are you?
Fantastic. I got a great one for you. Your eyes are like a beautiful sunshine.
Oh, that's
You like
nice.
That one?
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, that's too sweet.
It's too sweet.
But that's not for an opening line. That's for, like,
need a little humor.
The next time that you see her.
Yeah, you need a little humor.
Oh, next time around. Oh, it's the next time around one. Okay. All right.
Yeah, save that one, Tom.
Save that one. You got it, Bob.
Appreciate the call.
Anytime. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you need it needs to be see that line about what was the line I just used to pick you up? See, that line was good because about being forward, high. That was good because it's a little bit, you know, it's kind of clever. It's a little forward, got a little edge to it.
Yeah. How about this one? Are you Google? Because you have everything I'm searching for. That's from Tim.
I hope guys are writing all these down now for this weekend. Here's one. Tom, hi there.
Yes. Good afternoon. Another good show, as usual.
Hi.
What show are you listening to? What do you got for us there, Tommy?
Well, you know what? None of that cornball creepy stuff. My now wife.
Thank you.
I was carpooling with someone and eyeing each other.
Oh. You were eyeing somebody that you were carpooling?
And introduced myself to my now wife's younger sister and left my phone number, and the rest is history.
All right, what is the takeaway for us? What can we learn from that, Tom?
Don't be creepy. I guess I made a decent impression with her younger sister. I just had a little conversation with her, and it was none of that weird stuff.
All right, be straight. Don't be creepy. Got that.
Exactly. To the point, yes.
Well said, my man. Okay, we've learned a lot today, haven't we?
Is that a mirror in your pocket? Because I can see myself in your pants.
Marianne's Celebrity Report to the Nation is on the air.
Let's get the latest update on celebs over to the Celebrity Report anchor desk. What's going on?
Here we go. Well, more news on Philip Seymour Hoffman's death at age 46. As reported by Harvey Levin of TMZ a little while ago, 50 bags of heroin, prescription drugs, were found in his Manhattan apartment. Some of the bags were full, others were empty. Investigators also discovered 5 prescription drugs in his home, which are used to treat conditions such as ADD and high blood pressure. And obviously, early reports are that he died of a drug overdose on Sunday. Let's take a listen to a little bit of his conversation on 60 Minutes with Steve Kroft back from 2006.
You said you don't drink.
No, I don't.
In fact, you went into rehab at a fairly early age.
Yeah, I did. I did. I went, I got sober, I was 22 years old. Yeah.
So this was drugs or alcohol or both?
Yes, all that stuff. Yeah. Was anything I can get my hands on? Yeah, I liked it all. Yeah.
And why did you decide to stop?
You panicked. It was, I was 22 and I got panicked for my life. It really was. It was just that.
Wow. Philip Seymour Hoffman on 60 Minutes about 8 years ago being interviewed by Steve Croft. As I mentioned to Harvey Levin, we were talking to him, and Harvey also loved Hoffman's role as critic, music critic Lester Bangs in Almost Famous. He is great in that, but a lot of people didn't see a little movie called Pirate Radio, and if you can get that, watch Pirate Radio. He is really good in that movie, and if you love music and you love radio, you will love Pirate Radio, and you will love Philip Seymour Hoffman in that movie.
Yep. An all-star lineup of Saturday Night Live alums showed up this past weekend to give an emotional send-off to Seth Meyers, who's taking over NBC's late night show. Among the stars making surprise appearances during Weekend Update, Amy Poehler, Bill Hader, Andy Samberg, and Fred Armisen. Let us listen in now.
Anybody, thank you for coming to my last show.
It's your last show?
Oh, God. It is my last show, and I just want to say being out here with my co-anchors and my dear friend and my husband is the perfect way to end. This is the job I always wanted, and I had the best time, and I met the best people, and I just want to thank the crew and the cast, and especially the writers and Lauren, and thank you very much. And take us out, Cecily.
For Weekend Update, I'm Cecily Strong.
I'm Amy Poehler.
I'm Stefan Meyers.
And I'm Seth Meyers. Good night.
He got a little emotional there. Well, he's been there since 2001, I think.
It seems like since forever.
Yep.
Wow.
And he'll be taking over for Jimmy Fallon, who takes over for Jay Leno.
Mm-hmm.
Leno's last show is this week.
That's amazing. Jerry Seinfeld and George Costanza, Jason Alexander, reunited for a Seinfeld-themed Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. A part of it was shown during the Super Bowl, and now the full 6-minute episode has been released.
Yeah, it's on the web. That's Jerry's online series. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. And you can watch some old ones there, too. They're funny. They're good.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the Super Bowl, the ratings have come in, and the numbers are down from previous years. That's no surprise. Early Nielsen data for the Seahawks-Broncos game had the Super Bowl coming in at 96.9 million viewers with a 34.4 rating in the 18 to 49 demographic. Last year's game on CBS had 108.4 million viewers as opposed to the 96.9. The lower ratings can be attributed to the nature of the game. The Seattle Seahawks scored consistently throughout the game, with the Broncos only getting 8 points in the third quarter. So that could be part of the issue. Twitter reported close to 25 million tweets were made during the telecast of the game, up from 24.1 million during last year's game.
Well, every year you're going to see more and more social media connected to television broadcasts like that.
Mm-hmm. Two more key roles have been cast in the upcoming Superman Batman movie. Jesse Eisenberg will play Superman's arch enemy, Lex Luthor, and Jeremy Irons will play Bruce Wayne's butler mentor, Alfred. And it's set for release May 6th of 2016.
I still think of Jason Eisenberg as the kid who invented Facebook.
I know.
Mark Zuckerberg. And by the way,
every time I see him, I think
they kind of look alike.
They look, yeah, I think that's him.
It's 10 years, I think, today or tomorrow, since the real kid came up with that Facebook idea. He's on the Today Show.
10 years
tomorrow.
Only?
Mark Zuckerberg, yeah.
No,
I think
is that possible?
I think it's just 10 years.
I don't think so. 10 years?
We'll look into that, but yeah. I believe that's true.
Okay, well, I'm trying to do the math. How old were my kids? 14? When that...
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought they were younger. Okay, when you see Kate Middleton on an Australian tour in April, don't be surprised if she looks a little bit different. Queen Elizabeth has been urging her to have a makeover for the trip, including... Listen to this, Bob. More tiaras, more longer skirts.
Hey.
So the designers are busy working on elegant dresses that are more sophisticated than Kate's normal attire, and less likely to blow around immodestly in the wind.
That's it. Yeah.
Yes. So the Queen's own personal dresser is reportedly helping prepare Kate's wardrobe. I wonder how Kate feels about this. Seriously. I mean, can she like this? Her grandmother's designer is designing her clothes now.
They're used to that, aren't they?
I don't know. The Queen is going to be watching closely.
This just in, Facebook was launched in February of 2004. Founded by Mark Zuckerberg and his college roommates and fellow Harvard students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like it's been around for so much longer than that. And I love this story. J.K. Rowling says she regrets the way she ended Harry Potter. She says that she now believes she should have paired Hermione Granger with Harry instead of with his friend Ron Weasley. Bob, this means nothing to you.
No, it doesn't.
But
I know you read the books.
To a lot of people.
So, and people always would say to me, it's okay that you didn't read the books. You'll still dig the movies. I have trouble with Harry Potter. I have trouble with Lord of the Rings.
I think that if you had been the one reading the books to the kids, you would have enjoyed them.
Probably.
And the movie. Rowling is saying, I wrote the Hermione-Ron relationship as a form of a wish fulfillment for reasons that have very little to do with literature and far more to do with me clinging to the plot as I first imagined it. Hermione ending up with Ron. Distance has given me perspective on that, she says. It was a choice I made for very personal reasons, not for reasons of credibility. Now she says that Hermione and Harry would have been a better match. And that as it stands, if this were true, obviously, Hermione and Ron would have probably needed relationship counseling down the road. Emma Watson, who played Hermione in the movie, agrees with Rowling.
Is she, J.K. Rowling is done writing, right?
No, she's writing. She's doing more stuff.
Not Harry Potter, though.
She went on to do some adult books, and then there's, I don't know, I think I've heard recently that there are rumors that she's working on something related to Harry Potter.
Quite a story. She sort of was single and writing by herself.
Yeah, she would go to coffee shops and spend the day there just writing these stories. And it took a lot to sell them. She tried to sell them to a lot of different publishers, and nobody would take them.
Hey, somebody passed on the Beatles, too. That's what happens.
Yep.
Is that it?
That's it.
Okay, that's it. From the Celebrity Report to the Nation Newsroom, back to open up the Sarat and Marciano mailbox next.
Wait, oh yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman. Wait, wait, hey, 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 Mr. Postman. Mr. Postman, look at me.
What's in the mail? What's in the email? What's on Facebook? And who is texting us? Let's check the mailbox and open it up.
All right, here goes. Bob, here's a great suggestion for you about your book that you wanted to publish, but somebody stole the name.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to call it One More Thing.
Mm-hmm.
How about One Last Thing or One Final Thing?
I think Jerry Springer calls it that.
Okay. And, somebody else suggested you call it By the Way.
But thanks, Dan. By the Way. Okay, that's a good one.
Or be, like, cool, like the hip kids now call it BTW. You know what I mean?
That's BTW.
My, you know, by the way.
OMG. LOL.
Boy, Bob, you impress me every single day.
I'm hip.
All right. I didn't get any sleep last night, and I'm also craving steaks. So people had a lot to say about that. Lack of sleep equals stress equals inflammation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about that with our heart doctor today, too.
Mm-hmm. Try falling to your roots and do some frijoles negros con arroz on the side. Grill onion, mushroom, and peppers and add some fresh tomatoes sliced with salt and pepper, no meat. Okay.
Good recipe.
I could go for that.
It sounds good way you say it, too.
That is a staple in our house, by the way.
Say it again.
Frijoles negros con arroz.
Yeah.
Hey, now. I like this advice, though. Here's what you do. You do a 30-day elimination diet. Eliminate grains, sugars, and starches. come on, it's only 30 days, then see how you look, feel, and perform. Do a low-carb, high-protein diet. Include grass-fed butter and grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, avocados, etc. Healthy oils only. Lots of veggies with meals. Eat whole organic eggs, including the yolks. You will be transformed. I want to know if Dr. Peter Van Hewell wrote this.
Sounds too complicated.
Are you kidding?
From our holistic guy?
I don't know. This is exactly how I want to eat.
Okay.
And this is, yeah.
Okay, maybe some listeners will invite me to dinner with them.
People talking about the Super Bowl. Somebody said, I didn't realize that I liked Bruno Mars until I heard the songs. I've loved the Chili Peppers since I was a kid. Great to see them represent and not look like a bunch of old farts. Best commercial of the night, according to my own personal rating, was David Beckham in his briefs. It worked for me. Makes me want to go out and buy some for the husband.
That's not you talking. Somebody texted us that.
No, but that's pretty much how I feel, too.
And by the way, I talked about that Heinz ketchup commercial, how they lost the Chicago market because there were a couple of seconds showed ketchup going on a hot dog. And we got a text from someone who says they thought of us, Marianne, yesterday. My girlfriend and I stopped at Bella Luke's on Route 12 in Fox Lake. We both had the Vienna hot dog special. I did not ruin my dog with ketchup. My girlfriend did, but it was her idea to stop there, and she treated. Okay.
All right, so we had a lot of feedback on the pickup lines. You want to hear some?
Sure.
Okay.
Do I?
Yes, of course you do.
Okay, all right.
Do you know where I see myself in a year? Sitting right here with you, celebrating a wonderful year together.
That's syrupy.
I'm not staring at your boobs. I'm looking at your heart.
Yeah, good. Nice try.
Thank God I got my library card because I'm checking you out. And this is from Andy and Bartlett. Okay. Would you be interested?
Could be more original, but okay.
Would you be interested in finding a beach and sunset sometime? Because I bet I'd be able to win every photo contest with your picture.
Too saccharine.
Okay, so here is one. Would you like to hear one in Spanish?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so somebody sent us a text saying, pickup line used in Mexico. Hola, soy un ladrón, y estoy aquí para robar tu corazón.
You cannot say that on the air. what, we got to translate. What was that all about? What did that mean? What was it?
It means, hi, I'm a thief, and I'm here to steal your heart.
And if you use that line in Mexico, it might scare somebody.
Yeah.
Remember, we were talking about Ernie Banks' birthday on Friday, and we got this message on our Facebook page. Happy birthday to Mr. Cub. Can't wait for the new season. Like your show, Bob and Marianne. I remember back on LS in the 70s, you explained how your last name was spelled. You went through a very long story about your family's history and how the last name was really Ott, O-T-T, but then someone was knighted, and so the name was changed to Sir Ott. I knew it was a joke, but just thought it was funny and never forgot it. Thanks for keeping me company during the day.
I'm glad he knew.
The fact that you, that's from Denise Albert.
Oh, so she.
The fact that you remembered Denise makes me very happy. Remind me to knight you when I get a chance, and you'll be, well, you won't be Sir Alberts, but... You'll be. What happens when you knight a woman? You can't knight a woman, can you?
A duchess? Does she become a duchess? I don't know. Maybe.
I'll make you the queen, Denise. Don't worry.
Marianne and Bob, I would like to hear more about you two not sleeping together. My husband and I are considering it due to his snoring, etc. Uh-huh. From Julie. I would like to clarify something. We're going to keep sleeping together, but not when you're being loud.
To be continued tomorrow at noon. Let's talk to Gary. Not a moment too soon after this.